Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the March 12th meeting of the Education Finance Division to order, please. Representative Juergens, have you had time with the minutes?
Actually, I have, and I would like to move the minutes from the previous meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Juergens. Any discussion to the Juergens motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, you may notice that a slight change to the agenda that you'll see going forward. As policy deadline approaches, our work will ramp up. We've got a large number of bills by authors of both parties that we're wanting to hear for consideration and possible inclusion in the committee's division report. And so Ms. Burt has added times to the agenda. She gave me 3 minutes to get us going, do the minutes, and yammer for a few moments before bringing up Representative Purcell. We're going to do our best, and Mr. Withers has already told me he's going to try to hold me accountable to the times on the agenda. So just ask that we focus our questions and our comments because this is a matter of respect for bill authors, testifiers, and the public who are here to participate or observe. So with that, Representative Purcell. You get the both of you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Outstanding. Representative Detmer, would you like to move that House File 525 be before the committee and laid over for possible inclusion in a future division report?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 525 and lay it over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much, Representative Detmer. Representative Purcell, as the chief author, I'll defer to you first, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members. I'm going to be as brief as needs be here this morning. Many of you have seen a bill similar to this or maybe identical to this before you. Those of you that have been in the legislature for a few years anyway, and this is about several school districts in the state of Minnesota endeavoring to use their classroom money in the classroom, because there is a deficit in their transportation of pupils budget. So our effort here this morning, and particularly we've got several testifiers, and I'll advise them to be as succinct as possible. But this is built to fund school districts in the state, and with you see Representative Detmer sitting with me, and he's representing the Forest Lake School District and the other large school district, and these are geographically large districts by and large that come out of the current transportation funding formula with a deficit for transporting pupils. And Bemidji School District, Independent School District 31 is another one up in my district. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would offer for Representative Detmer to say a few words if you're good with that, and then we'll go to a few testifiers.
Certainly. Thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This is something that Representative Purcell and I have been working on for a few years, and I know I represent Forest Lake, Stillwater, and Chisago school districts. And, of course, as many of you know, I taught for 34 years at Forest Lake High School. And currently, I just saw a new number. There's 90 school districts now that have this difficulty with providing funds for they're shortchanged in funds for the transportation of the students to school. And I know Forest Lake, over the years, have been taking funds out of their general funds to cover the shortfall of about $1 million a year. And so that's, and I think Bemidji is around $800,000 a year. Anoka School District is about $600,000 a year. So the amount of money that that the state is providing for our transportation is short on these 90 school districts. And a friend of mine that is sitting to my right, Mr. Steve Massey, he's the superintendent of schools. In fact, he was the last principal that I served under at Forest Lake High School. And I guess we turn it over to Mr. Massey.
Thank you, Superintendent Massey. Welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. First of all, I'd like to thank our representative, Detmer, for his work in championing this cause, as well as Representative Purcell. Forest Lake Area Schools is a district just 25 miles north of St. Paul, Minneapolis. Our district is approximately 220 square miles with an enrollment of 6,100 students. Transportation funding, as you are aware, is based on student enrollment, not the miles a district must drive to transport students. Consequently, districts with a large geography and dispersed housing, like Forest Lake, Bemidji, and some 90 other school districts, must offset their transportation costs from the general fund. Specifically, Forest Lake draws approximately $500,000 from the general fund each biennium to cover this deficit. Quite frankly, this is an issue of equity, as it affects our districts, unlike it may affect other districts. $500,000 in our case is equivalent to 10 teachers or critical services we are not able to provide for our students. Specifically, we are asking for two things in House File 525. First, to raise the dollar amount currently identified in statute to cover this deficit. Currently, the formula has 18.2%. We're asking that that number, the percent covered in this bill, the percent of the deficit that could be covered, that that number be raised. Second, we're asking in this bill to form a comprehensive task force to study this issue and identify a more permanent fix to the issue. Thank you.
Thank you for your brevity, Superintendent. Representative Detmer or Representative Purcell, do you have other testifiers?
I do, Mr. Chair. Bring up from the Bemidji School District, Mr. Greg Linen.
Mr. Linen, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. Proceed with your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Chris Linen. I'm the Director of Business at Bemidji Schools. I've been in the school business for 28 years, the last 19 in Bemidji, and we're here to talk about the excess cost of a mandated service and how we can make school districts whole instead of taking dollars out of the classroom. If some of you have this map in front of you, I hope it got handed out. If not, we have copies of it. Basically, what I'm trying to portray with this map is the geographic size that we deal with in Bemidji, which is a triangle that's effectively 40 miles north to south and 30 miles east to west. So it's a large area, and I've put in here reference points superimposed over the metro area with Albertville, Stillwater, Rosemont, and Shakopee to give you an indication of the kind of geography we're talking about. It's 825 square miles. There are four factors that lead to why it is that we operate at a deficit, and they come together. One of them is this geography. We have huge space to cover. The second is the number of miles that that huge space actually forces us to travel. The third is the concentration of ridership. We, because of our levels of poverty, have a very high percentage of riders. So if you have two school districts who receive similar funding on a per pupil basis, but one of them has 50% ridership and one of them has 80% ridership, you're going to see a higher cost at the district with the 80% ridership. But there's no additional revenue to recognize that. There is, however, a tool in the toolbox, and thank you for that. In the last session, the adjustment factor was set at 18% of the deficit. I would hope we could get that to zero. That's really my goal. Instead of having a deficit, let's just cover the cost of the mandated service. So those are three of the factors that lead to our deficit. The fourth is the charter schools that we have in our school district. We do receive their funding for transportation, but it's not enough to cover the cost, and particularly the add-on cost of taking one of the charter schools 18 miles out to a remote location and back. So those four factors lead us to a deficit each year in excess of $500,000, and I would request that you consider raising the adjustment from 18% of the deficit to 100%. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Linen. Questions from the committee for the testifiers or the authors of the bills? Well, this is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 525, excuse me. Just a couple of numbers off, Representative Purcell.
And it's math week.
And it is. Chair Murphy is correct. It is math week because, let's see, it's Thursday is Pi Day. Right? Right? March 14th? 21. It's a deep disappointment to the chair that we're not meeting on Thursday. Representative Detmer, did you have a question or a comment you wish to? Oh, okay. With that, gentlemen, thank you very much. Excuse me, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do either of you superintendents know if we had not rolled out the $170 per student back when that happened in 95, what difference would that have made? Would that have changed anything for you in your sparsity areas? Do you know?
Gentlemen, superintendent?
Mr. Chair, Representative, back in 1995 when the shift was to include transportation in the formula, we lost the calculus from miles driven to headcount. So we lost the balancing or the equitability in that process. So as a result, districts with larger enrollment and smaller geography
did well.
We're in a better situation with that shift than districts with larger geography and less students.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you lost either way.
Yes, we did.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
If all the testifying is done, I'd like to renew my motion.
All right. Thank you. With that, Representative Detmer renews his motion that House File 525 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future division report. Thank you all very much. Thank you for coming today. Appreciate your testimony. Oh, Representative Purcell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
My apologies. All right. Very good. Representative Purcell, do you want to just stay there and present your next, your other bill as well at this time?
I'm very good with that, Mr. Chair.
Let you get in, do your work, and then move on. Representative Kunesh-Podein? Do you wish to move House File 501 be before the committee for possible inclusion in a future division report?
I would be happy to move that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Kunesh-Podein. With that, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay,
take a minute.
And members, this House File 501 is a bill that to provide funding for the Minnesota Bureau of Indian Education schools for partnership with the Minnesota Reading Corps and the Minnesota Math Corps. Being Math Day and all, I think the emphasis on math here for a few minutes. And this is for research-based support to accelerate student literacy and math skill attainment. And I'm going to, in the interest of brevity, Mr. Chair, I'll ask. I do have a couple of testifiers, and I would just I'll gladly stand for questions at the appropriate time. But I would like to get my testifiers and their testimony, if that's okay.
Perfect. I have on the list Dr. Sandy
Pullis.
Pullis. All right. Dr. Pullis. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Sandy Pullis, and I am with CIRV Minnesota today to talk about the Total Learning Classroom Program and how we hope to partner with the Bureau of Indian Education. As many of you might be aware of, the Minnesota Reading Corps program is an effective intervention program, especially for students of color and our English language learner students. And the Total Learning Classroom program is an extension of the existing Reading Corps program. The majority of students at our Total Learning Classroom sites currently have about 80% of students who are below grade level proficiency in reading, which puts a huge strain on our multi-tiered system of support within our schools. And it puts a really tough burden on our principals and building leaders to make decisions as to which students they should prioritize for reading interventions. The Total Learning Classroom program was specifically designed to address students with high needs in schools that have high populations of students below grade level proficiency. So here's how this program works. Our scholar coaches are AmeriCorps members that attend the same rigorous institute training as our AmeriCorps reading course tutors. And then they also have ongoing sustained support and professional development. They receive training in intervention, database decision making, and then they're embedded into one kindergarten through third grade classroom across the school. So within each school, there's one scholar coach in each classroom, kindergarten through third grade. And then there's also an embedded systems coach like myself that works directly with principals, administrators, and other building leaders to help increase that capacity at the site level. This program began 4 years ago at a school in North Minneapolis and really involves a collaborative approach with working with school leaders and community organizations to improve students' reading proficiency. This past year, we've now expanded to serve at 8 different school sites across the metro area. As I mentioned, there is a scholar coach or Reading Corps Plus tutor that serves in the classrooms. So they're trained in those interventions to be delivered individually or in small group. And then when they're not providing those interventions, they're supporting the classroom with core instructional practices. So they're trained on evidence-based practices in the classroom on how to support core instruction. There's also a master coach role like myself that works directly with school leadership to evaluate the current multi-tiered system of support or intervention infrastructure to then build some goals for the school in order to enhance the school capacity throughout the school year. And then the coach also supports classroom teachers with evaluating what the teachers' needs are to enhance that literacy block. We're now in our fourth year, as I mentioned, and looking at data over the years at Nellie Stone Johnson, the year prior to us serving, only 18.3% of third graders at that site were at proficiency. And this last school year, 37.5% of third graders are at proficiency. So while we still have a long ways to go, this was a significant improvement. And in fact, they actually moved from the comprehensive needs area to the targeted needs area based on the North Star assessment. Additionally, this program also helps contribute to the teacher pipeline as many of our scholar coaches move on and use their AmeriCorps Siegel Education Award to help pay for their education. And we've had 30% of our scholar coaches that are that identify of scholar coaches of color, so hopefully that also is contributing to the diversifying our teacher pipeline. So our plan moving forward with this, if this were to happen, we would hire a project manager that is culturally competent of tribal communities. We'd facilitate a participatory partnership planning process, working with the community, and then hire master coaches with the site in hopes of placing 16 scholar coaches.
Thank you very much, Dr. Polis. Mr.
Tarks.
Tarks, okay. Principal Tarks, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Justin Tarks. I am the principal of St. Paul City School. Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, for the last 10 years I've been at St. Paul City School. We're five minutes away here from the Capitol. We're a preschool through eighth grade school with 470 kids, 95% free and reduced lunch, 55% English language learners. Our student population is 50% Latino, 25% African American, and 25% Hmong. We're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year. We've had Reading Corps tutors in our building for the last 10 years. We're very excited that the last 2 years we've added Math Corps to our school family because we know how important these programs are for the work that is happening in our classrooms. We have a high trauma population, and in order for learning to happen, kids have to feel safe with the people that they're around. When students are faced with a challenge like learning to read, it can activate a survival response, where you don't want people to know that this is hard for you. So you don't ask for help, and you might act out to escape or distract from the struggle. Through the Total Learning Classroom, we have 8 scholar coaches in our school, one in each of our K-3 classrooms. The scholar coach works in partnership with the teacher. They share information and discuss strategies and what works for the students. Some of our scholar coaches are back for a second year because of the great relationships they've built with their teachers. It is truly a partnership to make sure that our students are thriving and successful. I'll tell you about one of our students, and we'll call him O. Life for O is not easy. He struggles with anxiety. He struggles with impulsiveness. Academics are a challenge for him. But he works very hard, and his favorite part of the day is the one-on-one connection that he gets with his scholar coach. It's precious. It's motivating. He lights up when they work together. He feels safe with her. He feels supported, which leads him to try without fear, and now he loves to read. It's just one of many examples that we have. We've always had a strong literacy framework, but what makes this model unique and so valuable is that you get an extra connection with the student. Our students are growing in this program, and what's more remarkable is that the impact is long-lasting. We're not seeing the summer slump like we used to in our younger grades and when students come back in the fall. They come back ready to build on what they learn and keep growing. We find members from the community to serve as scholar coaches. In fact, 10 years ago, I was a fifth grade teacher at St. Paul City School, and one of my former students just began as a scholar coach, which is fun to see. She tutors by day. She attends college classes by night. We're so fortunate that several of our former Reading Corps tutors are now part of our school community as paraprofessionals and teachers. As new teachers, they were able to jump in and understand data better and are more comfortable with it than most first-year teachers, and we attribute that to the training and experience with the Reading Corps. One former tutor is actually our internal coach at our school. There's something really powerful that happens when you combine reading and relationship. This program is critical. Our students are given the time and attention they need every single day. Our students don't just learn to read, they love to read. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Principal Tarks. Any other testifiers, Representative Purcell?
Mr. Chair, I do have one other testifier this morning.
Please.
Lori Harper, the Education Director at Lake Mandeville and Jubilee.
Wonderful. Well, Ms. Harper, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. I'm Lori Harper. I'm the Director of Education for the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. I just wanted to go on record here to state that we at Leech Lake do support this this initiative. It's rare that we have the opportunity to look for supports outside of our own community. So right now, Leech Lake is in support of that. Miigwech.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Harper. Representative Purcell, any closed, this is a public hearing. Is there any input from the public? Okay, hearing none. Any questions from our members? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is for Ms. Polis.
Hello.
Has Reading Corps, Ms. Polis, thank you for your testimony. Has Reading Corps been available to contract schools before, or Math Corps as well as that?
Yes. So we actually have an established relationship serving in other Native American schools and charter schools. Specifically, Total Learning Classroom right now is in 4 charter schools, I believe, and so we continue to provide flexibility in meeting the school's needs.
So, Ms. Poulos, the tribal members, though, would be the ones trained, correct, for being the tutors and the coaches. Is that correct?
Ms. Poulos.
It can be the tribal members. It can be any community member who is interested in making a difference in their community and receiving training on intervention. And our members have a range of professional experiences from recent high school graduates to retired folks. And so it's really quite open to whoever's interested.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
And that's excellent to hear. The other is, have you seen evidence of our tutors or coaches moving into the teacher pipeline? Because this is a great opportunity.
Yes. We actually we have a tutor, scholar coach, who's now a teacher at Anishinaabe Academy. And I think we've had about two scholar coaches that have moved on through the Grow Your Own program in the Minneapolis teacher training program, and so we do see this as a potential pipeline as we've seen this position move to teaching positions.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Any other Representative Edelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Purcell, I think this is a great bill. Anything we can do to help our kids with reading is in math is really important. For populations, I have two questions, actually. So one is, in terms of the models that coaches are using, have you developed your own reading model? Is it a combination of several models? I'm just curious as to what model is being used. Is it like the phonics approach, the multisensory approach? I really appreciate that you understand that relationship building and actually education, those are really, really combined. So. That question first, and then I can ask the second one.
Madam Chair and Representative Edelson, I'm going to defer to my testifier for that, if that's okay.
Ms. Polis?
Yes, thank you for the question. Yes, so we work to include a phonics-based approach to teaching students, and we do partner with several different organizations that teach reading within the building, too. So, for example, at St. Paul City School and Nellie Stone Johnson, we work collaboratively with Groves Academy, which they're now providing training that's more phonics-based. We also do class-wide interventions for classrooms where students are performing below grade level proficiency on a larger scale. So then we'll develop interventions that focus specifically on phonics, blending words, and fluency, or even phonemic awareness skills, so basic letter sound practice to help students.
Representative Edelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that answer. And then also, it's just, maybe I missed this. What grades do you target, and how far will you actually go up? Because I know that, you know, we focus on K through 3, which is where we should, but there are also kids that are above 4th grade to, you know, 12th grade that still have issues with reading, and so I guess I might have missed it, if you could just let me know that again.
Ms. Polis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we work with kindergarten through third grade. The tutors or the scholar coaches work directly with kindergarten through third grade, but the coach has the flexibility to work with all grade levels in the school. So I think that's a unique part of the program is, for example, me as a coach, I can work with our leadership team to help implement class-wide interventions or train staff members to do interventions. So it's really building the school infrastructure, that sustainability piece on the intervention.
Members, any other questions? Representative Purcell, closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, as you all know, if we get a spark in these children, they're going to grab onto education, most of them anyway, and that's what this bill is all about. So I appreciate your kind support.
Thank you. Representative Kunesh-Podin, would you like to renew your motion to lay House File 501 over for possible inclusion?
I do renew that motion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Kunesh-Podin moves to lay House File 501 over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Thank you. Up next is Representative Kunesh-Podin. Good morning, Representative Kunesh-Podin. Would you like to move House File 1100 and your author's amendment before the committee to lay it over for possible inclusion in the division bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to move House File 1100 to be included.
And your amendment?
My amendment is A1, and this is basically to clean up some language and then to ensure that there are no gaps in the funding for this bill.
Very good. Proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. This bill is here to propose continued investment in our Native communities and appropriate an allowance of $3,230 per pupil as a permanent cost of roughly $1.7 million in fiscal year 2020 and $2.1 million in fiscal year 2021. This goes back quite historically, the reasons for the shortage in our BIE schools. When the United States signed treaties with our Indian tribes, it stripped them of their lands, but in exchange, it promised to provide a number of services, and one of those is being education of our indigenous communities to tribal members into perpetuity. The federal government, unfortunately, has never really met the full responsibilities that they had promised, and so generations of our Native kids have been left behind. Luckily, Minnesota has stepped up and filled that gap between the federal dollars going to our four BIE schools. And for those of you who don't know, BIE is our Bureau of Indian Education Schools. We have four in Minnesota. These are federal schools governed by the federal government. They were originally intended to be funded by the federal government, and we found that that's not been the case. And so Minnesota has stepped up to fill that gap, as I said. So this bill would fill the gap between federal dollars going to our four BIE schools, and it brings the per pupil funding in line with all of Minnesota students, and it's made the difference in the last decade or so. House File 1100 makes permanent the higher maximum amount of per pupil aid for tribal contract schools, and it links the maximum aid allowance to growth in the general education basic formula allowance for future years. Since 1970s, Minnesota has allocated money to enhance the learning opportunities of our Native students, who are among the poorest in the nation. There are about 700 students that attend our Minnesota tribal, four tribal contract and grant schools. Minnesota pays the supplemental state aid through an enrollment-based formula to the tribal contract schools, and for the past 4 years, the maximum funding for the tribal schools was set at that $3,230 per pupil. However, under the current law, the maximum aid per pupil is set to drop back to the former level of $1,500 per student, and we are asking that this would continue on the higher amount. The maximum amount would continue on. In your folder, you will see an article titled "Separate and Unequal: Indian Schools, a Nation's Neglect," and this gives a pretty good overview of what has happened over history in our Native schools, and gives you a little idea of how much that extra funding has made a difference in our schools. So at this time, I would like to bring up a couple of testifiers that can share a little bit more information.
Representative and members, before we do that, my apologies. We need to actually make a motion and adopt your A1 amendment, and that's my mistake. So before we take any more testimony, let's go ahead and do that. Representative Joachim, would you like to make a motion to adopt the A1?
I move to adopt the A1 amendment.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Now we're in order. We can proceed. Okay. It looks like I have Dr. Jane Harstad. And Dr. Lori Harper, whoever would like to go first. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Jane Harstad, and I'm the Director of Indian Education for the Minnesota Department of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1100. The Minnesota Department of Education is grateful to Representative Kunesh Podein for her efforts to ensure equitable learning opportunities for all students, including students attending our four Bureau of Indian Education schools. making sure that all Minnesota students receive equitable access to educational opportunities, including those who attend federal BIE tribal contract schools, has been an ongoing priority of MDE. The increased equalization aid was part of an historic bipartisan package of supports for American Indian students that was enacted in 2014 and was reauthorized with bipartisan support in subsequent legislative sessions. And it is a part of the budget recommendations proposed by Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. MDE supports making this important funding ongoing rather than just a one-time appropriation, and further supports linking the aid to any future increases in the per pupil formula so that it will keep pace with inflation. Minnesota is one of only a few states that provides equalized funding for students attending tribal contract schools. We respectfully urge you to take action this session to ensure continuity and sustainability for this important funding so that American Indian students attending Minnesota's tribal contract schools have access to continued opportunities to learn, thrive, and realize their full potential. Thank you.
Thank you. Lori Harper.
Thank you. I'm Lori Harper, Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe's Director of Education. I also serve on our school board as our chairperson for the Buganagijic School, our BIE school at Leech Lake. The Buganagijic School was founded in the late 70s due to inequity in our educational system. Our American Indian students were being pushed out at higher rates. Our dropout rates were dismal. I'm not saying that they're any better today. However, Leech Lake has a history of moving and pushing forward our educational endeavors. Education is one of our priorities at Leech Lake, and we have a history of cobbling together funding to ensure the success of our students. One of the things that I'd like to talk about on the impact of the state's equity aid, currently with within the Buganagijic School, we serve 182 students. K through 6 is 97, 7 and 8 is 81, and 9 through 12 is 54 students. We provide tutoring services before and after school, 3 days a week. We also provide a very small percentage of our high school guidance counselors' salary under the equity funding, and we also have a homeschool liaison whose percentage, I believe, is at 3% of her salary is paid for through the equity funding. Some of what our challenges are in the aid constantly being on the chopping block is that we have fits and bursts and starts. We don't have the permanency of being able to say definitively that we are going to see our successes all the way through. Like I said, we have fits and bursts of starts, a program begin date and a program end date, and so we're really at the behest of the state with this, with the equity funding having to be renewed every couple of years. Our students move a lot between our public school settings and our BIE settings. It's not that this funding is only geared towards BIE students. These are all of our students. As the tribal ed director, it is my responsibility for Leech Lake to know where our students are across, where all of our students are for our band membership. And our students are all over the state. We're just not seen. And I could go on and on and on. So I just want to thank you for allowing us this time to talk about it.
Thank you, Ms. Harper. Members, any questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Harper, thank you for coming here. Are you still accredited as a non-public school? I noticed that you were accredited in 1980. Does that accreditation continue?
Ms. Harper.
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
thank you, Representative Erickson.
And what measure of accountability do you maintain,
Ms. Harper,
at your school?
The measures of?
For performance, excuse me, for student performance.
Our students take the MCAs in addition to.
Do the MWEA, Madam Chair?
I'm sorry, what?
Madam Chair.
Representative and Ms. Harper.
Do you use the MWEA, the math testing as well?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Follow up? Any other questions?
Well, I have a question for Ms. Harstad.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So do the four tribal schools adhere to the Minnesota State Constitution?
Dr. Harstad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, they do. They follow not only the rules from the Bureau of Indian Education, but state law, and they do follow a variety of rules and laws set forth by MDE at the same time, so they follow more rules than others.
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair and Ms. Harstad, do you ensure then that the scores for the MCAs are reported to the department?
Dr. Harstad.
Madam Chair, thank you. Yes, all BIE schools report their MCA scores, and they are publicly reported on our MDE data and analytics page.
So, Madam Chair, so they do have report cards, Ms. Harstad?
Madam Chair.
Dr. Harstad.
At this time, it is not on the report card, but it is on the data and analytics page. Under other schools, non-public schools. So it's publicly reported.
Okay. Madam Chair. So, Ms. Harstad, I could only find the MCA scores on the BIE website for the four contract schools, and they were from 15-16. So have they been updated to the Department of Ed on the data analytics?
Dr. Harper. And maybe we should go to Caitlin Snyder?
Sure.
Madam Chair, Caitlin Snyder, Minnesota Department of Education. I just wanted to clarify for the members of the committee, the Bureau of Indian Education schools are under their own ESSA plan. All of the Department of Interior Indian schools are under their own ESSA plan. That's separate than the Minnesota ESSA plan, but they do have a federal accountability system that includes reporting the MCAs to the department's website. Traditionally, those results are not on the public-facing aspect of the department's website, but we do have their information and can report that if that would be of interest.
So, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Snyder, are the four contract schools then considered non-public?
Yes.
And, Ms. Snyder, in regard to the ESSA plan, the last time I talked to the Department of Education in Washington, they told me that the ESSA plans for the tribal schools or for the BIE schools, excuse me, were not yet complete. Is that correct?
Ms. Snyder.
I believe Ms. Harper might have a comment.
Ms. Harper.
Thank you. Currently, the BIE is in negotiated rulemaking under their state plan, with their final meeting occurring this week. And under the state plan that the BIE is undergoing are the negotiations for what and how the BIE schools will report on student successes and achievements.
So, Madam Chair, one last question.
Representative Erickson.
So, Ms. Harper, does that mean that this school year the Minnesota plan will apply, however, since the rulemaking is just in process?
Ms. Harper.
Thank you. We do tribal consultations through, I can speak for Leech Lake. So Leech Lake, we have a policy on tribal consultations under ESSA for our LEAs, for our public schools. And our policy states very definitively that it also includes our tribal schools. So yes, we do have plans in place. We are fully aware, and we have a list. We also work with MDE and the Office of Indian Education on assuring that our questions are answered. We don't take education lightly. We definitely, it is very important for us at Leech Lake and for all of our tribal nations here in Minnesota. And we are very concerned about the performance of our students in any educational setting.
Thank you, Ms. Harper. Because Mr. Withers is holding us to our time, we're going to take a question from Mr. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you.
And then we're going to move on to public testimony. Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe to the testifiers. I understand that the Federal Department of Interior manages the contract schools, specifically our four schools here in Minnesota. What type of funding, what type of management is that? Does that do for our schools here?
Who wants to take that one?
Madam Chair, I think it's it, for me, it would be a good understanding what type of management that the Department of Interior has over our schools, and then the amount of funding that we get for these schools, too.
Okay, Ms. Harstead. Or I'm sorry, Ms. Harper.
Thank you. So because we're all separate tribal entities, tribal nations, we all have separate contracts. Again, I can speak for Leech Lake, and I know that the other, I do know that for the other BIE schools that we do have separate school boards. We are governed by tribal law, federal law, and state law. We do follow open meeting rules. Everything that you guys have to follow, we follow as well, in addition to the federal layers that are imposed upon us. As far as your question about how, I guess I'm not understanding, because again, for Leech Lake, we have in place 638 contracts that in certain areas that allow us our own autonomy. And I do know that in working with the BIE, that the BIE has been under a reorganizational structure where they are allowing for the tribes to really determine our own governing structure, if you will. I'm not sure if I can explain it properly.
Representative Detmer, do you want to clarify that question?
And then the last part of my question was, I'm sure it's not enough, but the amount of funding that our schools get from the federal government.
Ms. Harper.
No, it's not enough. We are, because we're under a federal bureaucracy for a lot of our funding, we have to be very vigilant in knowing what our streams of funding are and understanding that every year we have to request the funding. It's not a guarantee. As much as we want to state it is, and it is guaranteed in our treaties are supposed to be the supreme law of the land, there is never a guarantee that our funding is going to remain intact.
Representative Detmer, for my own clarification, are you asking for a dollar amount?
Well, maybe a percentage of the budget of the school, how much of that is from the federal government?
Could you get that information to the committee? Could you find that answer? And then just for the sake of staying on track time-wise here, could you get that information to the committee?
Yep.
Thank you, Ms. Harper. Okay. Any public input? Okay. Seeing none, with that, Representative Kunesh-Podein renews her motion to move House File 1100 as amended for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Division report. Up next, Representative Wasliwick. Good morning and welcome to the committee. Representative Wozlowick, I think first we have to move your bill. Representative Katiza Watoon, would you like to move House File 1177 for possible inclusion in a future division report?
So move, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Katiza Watoon moves House File 1177. Representative Wozlowick, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. And thank you for the opportunity to present this bill here in committee for Minnesota Math Corps. The bill provides a $500,000 annual increase in funding for Math Corps for the next 2 years. Some of you may know I was actually a Minnesota Reading Corps member at Galtier Elementary in St. Paul several years ago. And when I served as a member of Reading Corps, I worked one-on-one with students, high-need students, to help them get their reading levels up by the end of the year. And for me, it's been a big piece of my commitment to public service and a reason why my experiences in the program were a big reason why I decided to run for office. And I'm happy to be in this role now, working on things like education policy. I had lots of conversations with students, built really great relationships, and so I wanted to carry this bill for the Minnesota Math Corps because they do a lot of similar work with math. And math is not my strong suit, but I think it's really important that students have the math skills they need to be successful later in school, but also later in life, and want to be able to support this organization with this bill. I know the legislature has put a particular focus on reading proficiency by third grade, and the world's best workforce goals and various streams of funding highlight the importance of early literacy for students. And I would like to see the same focus on students with math. I think when we look at our scores, test scores for math, we see there's a big need for additional improvement in those scores. And this is one way that we can reach those students who are most at risk and help them provide additional support for their math, building their math skills. With these additional funds, the Minnesota Math Corps will be able to serve a total of 10,800 students over the next 2 years. Additionally, the funding will help them build the interventions in grades K through 3. Outcomes data collected by Serve Minnesota, which is the organization that oversees Math and Reading Corps, is for students who receive Math Corps support, shows stronger gains for younger students. And we shouldn't really be surprised by that if we know kind of what we're doing in ed policy. But the earlier we can catch students, the easier it is to get them back on track. And I think we've talked a lot about early intervention in several other committees, and I think this is a really important piece of that. Both Minnesota Reading Corps and Math Corps are great examples of districts using multi-tiered systems of support to catch students early and try to get them back on grade level. So I will thank you again for this opportunity to present the bill, and I will turn it over to my testifiers.
Dr. David Parker.
Okay. Madam Chair, committee, my name is David Parker. I'm the Vice President of Research and Development at Serve Minnesota, and I think it's fair to say in the spirit of Math Week, one more acknowledgement to Math Week. I appreciate an opportunity to talk about how Math Corps can improve the success of more Minnesota students in the respect in the area of math and make math a strong suit for more students. I want to start by just acknowledging some research. It's likely not a surprise that researchers in the area of math education have found that early math predicts future math. What may be more of a surprise is the degree to which they're confident that a certain type of math skills really lays a foundation for future math learning, and that type of math skill is working with whole and rational numbers. And just to put that into context, what they found is that that particular set of skills is more predictive of future math learning throughout school than other math skills, and also some other things that you might logically think would be related to learning, like IQ and family background. I want to, again, kind of in the spirit of Math Week, here's an actual math problem. I won't ask anybody to answer this, but I wanted to give an example of what is this skill of working with whole and rational numbers, and you can see this problem to rank these fractions from smallest to largest. And when researchers put this problem in front of middle school students, only 50% of them could get that right. And that's a problem, and it reflects that gap because although it may look a little intimidating at first, it even does to me, because the way we can teach fractions can be improved in schools. If you had a pie chart or used a rod system, a Cuisenaire rod, you'd be able to see pretty quickly conceptually that 1/12 is the smallest, 5/9 is over a half, and then 2/7 can be simplified, or even without knowing that, it kind of falls in the middle. And so not being able to see that efficiently, a skill that is relatively simple conceptually, really does reflect a gap in students' skills. And in this case, that's a problem not just from an empirical or a research standpoint, but it's just a logical problem, because those types of skills, in this case fraction knowledge, are really a gateway skill to future math success. Algebra, solving for X, involves some fraction work. Go down to statistics, and statistics require a mastery of probability, and those are rational thinkings. And in Minnesota, we know that this gap shows up in our MCA performance. The best we've done is 2/3 of students in third grade are proficient in math, and as students get older and that foundation becomes more and more important because more is built on it, the outcomes look more concerning. And for students who are facing greater risk, we know that that's even more of a problem or a concern. I want to just mention two studies that illustrate why MathCorps is positioned to make a positive impact on this. In the first, both of them, by the way, were randomized control trials. So they're the gold standard of evaluation, allowing for that strongest statement that MathCorps is the thing that improves students' math outcomes. And in the first one, the students who received MathCorps grew the equivalent of a bonus semester of their math learning in a single semester. And in the second one, the students in MathCorps were 2 times more likely to reach year-end benchmarks. So those reflect an advantage in MathCorps over what their similar students who didn't get MathCorps. And what we're proposing in this particular bill is to increase our ability to serve more students, up to 10,800, as was mentioned, and to increase the number of schools who receive the support by about 50%. And again, as was mentioned, we have some success in building these programs that can be delivered via community resources and AmeriCorps. So we want to start earlier by working with kids in kindergarten through third grade to establish that foundation so that they can be successful throughout school. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wasilowicz, you have another testifier. Ms. Wright.
Madam Chairperson and members of the committee, my name is Ariana Wright, and I am the principal at Cassin Manterville Elementary School. We are a K-4 building with 840 students. We're located near Rochester in a rural setting with a growing population of newcomers and English learners, some that have not been in school for years. Districts are continuously searching for high-quality math intervention resources that aren't just rote practice, but offer a true understanding of numbers and number concepts. MathCorps is the key. The intensity of the interventions and the partnership between students lead to tremendous gains in student growth. We know early intervention makes all the difference. Because we are one of the lowest districts in the funding formula and we don't have additional funding, we do a great deal of instruction with very little resources. Programs like this are so critical to us. When we look at our lowest 10% of students and how they're growing compared to the highest 10% of our students who need more intervention are not growing as quickly, so our gap isn't closing. MathCorps is an excellent strategy to support this group. We've also seen an uptick in our special education population and know that programs like MathCorps and ReadingCorps will help reduce the number of referrals to those programs. Individuals who choose to serve in AmeriCorps programs such as MathCorps and ReadingCorps are a gift to our schools. They are our heroes. In particular, I'm thinking of one member named Shirley who came to us in her retirement knowing that she wanted to give back. Her AmeriCorps service provides the opportunity for deep relationships with our staff, families, and our communities, which in turn provides a rich learning experience for our students. Relationships matter to students now more than ever, and providing that through an AmeriCorps member like Shirley has been tremendous to our student success. MathCorps is a critical component to be sure we're serving all our students. Students need immediate feedback to check their thinking, and that extra dose of adult support will help them bust the math myth that math is something they can't do. When we do that, we'll have a community filled with confident learners who will one day become our workforce, our taxpayers, and our voters.
Thank you. Any questions from our committee? Okay, any questions from the public? Any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for hearing this bill. And I just want to say thank you again, and thank you to the testifiers for being here, and just, you know, remind folks that this is a really important program with some really great results. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be worth investing more in the program so we can see not just the test scores well, but making sure that we have the skill development to prepare kids for the future as well.
Thank you, Representative Wasilewicz. With that, Representative Katiza Batun renews her motion to lay House File 1177 over for possible inclusion in our division report. Up next, members, we're going to just take a little break from hearing bills. We're going to have a short informational presentation on bonding projects in the governor's bill. With us today, we have Emily Adrians, part of our House research, and I'll let you begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And this is very short, but if you'll look at, there's a one-page document in your folders. And what this is it's just the education-related items that were pulled out of the governor's recommendations for capital investment items for his with his 2019 overall recommendations. And so just for your information, I wanted you all to know what was in there. And so for education, the recommendation is $1.5 million for library construction grants. And what this would do is it would allow public libraries that receive funding to help improve access and meet ADA compliance standards. Perpich Center for Arts Education, and we heard some of these last week when the agencies came in and spoke informationally. And I can't remember if Perpich mentioned this, but the Perpich Center for Arts Education, there's a recommendation for $5 million for asset preservation. And asset preservation is typically just maintenance and preservation of buildings that agencies have. And they have, I think it's nearly, it says almost $7 million in deferred maintenance backlog. So the $5 million would help to address some of those needs. The Minnesota State Academies, I know that they did reference some of these projects. The recommendation from the governor is to do security corridor design, asset preservation, and dorm renovations. And so the total for this would be $13.2 million. And so the total for education, the education request is just about $20 million. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Nornes.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to look at that library construction grant. I believe that has been $2 million in the past. Mm-hmm. So that's a reduction from what we've had before. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, libraries can receive up to $1 million, so it doesn't go very far. And so this would go to possibly one or maybe two sites. I'm not advocating either way, but it is a reduction from what we've had, and it is pretty important to those libraries to have that money available. So,
thank you. Okay, up next. All right, we're going to just take another moment. We have a new handout, and we're going to call on Tim Strom. This is regarding the tribal contract schools and some funding there. So, Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, my apologies for being a little out of order today. There's a single-page handout regarding the Bureau of Indian Education tribal contract schools that we thought could help address Representative Detmer's and others' questions regarding the funding. This is estimated funding for fiscal year 20, so the federal funds are estimated, as are the pupil counts. But if you look under current formulas for FY20 on the first line listed there, you'll see the federal funds listed for each of the four tribal contract schools. And you can see the estimated amount for the Bug School at $882,000. And as you read across the page there, see the amounts for each of the other three schools. The way the formula works, as the testifier explained, is essentially the state calculates how much state aid those students would receive were they general education students, and then subtracts the federal funds from that. So that's what the calculations on the next four lines accomplish, and then There's a state aid less the federal funds number, and then the issue that Representative Kunesh-Poudin's bill addresses is whether that amount is capped or not. And you can see that the current cap of $1,500 shows up on the lesser of state aid or per pupil cap all the way across there, and so essentially under the law, as it bounces back to the $1,500 under current law for fiscal 20, the state aid amounts are those bottom line amounts there. Then the same calculations occur for the proposed funding under House File 1100, but with the one difference being that cap now is increased to $3,230. I think I've got a little typo here and says $3,250. But you can see there it's still the lesser of those two things. So as of the estimated data right now, one of the four districts would benefit by the full $3,230. The others would all benefit as well from the higher level, but would be at a funding level slightly less than that. So then the last line shows that state aid per pupil in total and the total state aid, and you can see the difference going across there of about $1.5 million based on this estimated data for fiscal year 20. Which is a little less than the number carried in the governor's budget because they made some off-model adjustments, essentially, for estimating the FY20 amounts.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Strom, do we know what each of these bands of Ojibwe puts into their schools locally?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, no, I don't have that information.
Thank you.
Other member questions? Okay, moving on. Up next, we're going to hear House File 2240, Representative Lean.
Are we good? All right. Okay.
Good morning and welcome to the committee.
Good morning.
Before us, we have House File 2240. Representative Hewitt, would you like to move House File 2240 for possible inclusion in the Ed Finance?
No.
So moved, Madam.
Oh.
What did I do wrong?
One moment. It's not you, it's me. We're going to move House File 2240 before the committee and refer it to Ways and Means, with a recommendation that it goes to Capital Investment Division.
Got it. So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we also have an amendment in this, A1 amendment. Representative Hewitt, would you like to move the A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape the author requests?
I wouldn't.
Very good. Okay, members, this time we need to vote on this amendment. All in favor of adopting the A1 amendment? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, now we're in order. Representative Lean, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I appreciate you hearing this bill today, House File 2240. And this bill would authorize a pilot project for a career academy and request $6 million in general obligation bonds for the career academy facility. The vision for this career academy was brought to myself and Representative Marquardt and Senator Eakin by the two superintendents who are here with me today of the Moorhead and Dilworth-Glendon-Felton school districts. And the purpose of this career academy is to connect high school students with area employers to develop career pathways in fields with high worker demands. The regional nature of this career academy would also serve other school districts in the Clay County area, such as Barnesville, Holly, and Euland-Hitterdahl. It would also be a partnership between the school districts and M-State in Moorhead to provide college credits. The benefits of this project would be twofold. For one, the project would connect high school students with area employers to meet high-demand workforce needs. It would also be a great way to keep high school students in the Clay County area after they graduate, as local job opportunities would abound from this project. Madam Chair, committee members, I'll now walk through the bill. Subdivision 1 would establish
Representative, before you do that, could you describe your amendment as well, please,
absolutely.
And thank you.
Absolutely. The amendment is largely technical in nature, and it cleans up language in Subdivision 2 around building age index so that it conforms to existing law for long-term facility maintenance. Also, the amendment addresses the reporting requirements just to provide more clarity on who's going to be doing the reporting.
Perfect. Thank you so much. To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I was saying, Subdivision 1 would establish the Career Academy as a joint powers venture between the participating school districts. The Career Academy must be designed as a pilot program that could be replicated for other school districts around the state. The Career Academy program must be aligned with the Minnesota state system through an agreement to provide college credits and must include public-private partnerships to align with local workforce needs. Subdivision 2 would exempt the Career Academy facility from being counted in a district's average building age index for the purposes of long-term facility maintenance revenue. And this is necessary as the Career Academy facility would lower the average building age index for the Moorhead School District. However, it does not decrease the square footage of the facilities overall that the district needs to maintain. In other words, the district is ultimately adding overall square footage without reducing or eliminating older buildings. This will lead to increased demands for overall building square footage maintenance in the district. Subdivision 3 would allow districts to include the Career Academy facility needs in their building lease levies. And this is necessary for school districts entering into the joint powers agreement to levy $4 that would be used to pay the host district for their share of building costs. Subdivision 4 would mandate a report on the performance of the Career Academy to the Commissioner of Education and legislative committees with jurisdiction over education by February 15 of each even-numbered year. The report would detail course offerings, student participation, college and career choices of students, the public-private partners, and placement rates of Career Academy graduates. The report must also include recommended strategies for other districts in implementing Career Academies. And then Subdivision 5 and 6 pertain to the bond sales, and then that $6 million of bond sales would go to the Moorhead School District for this project. Madam Chair and committee members, I can now stand for questions or allow our two testifiers to give comments.
Why don't we go ahead with the testimony first. Is it Tigerson? Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Brian Tigerson. I will probably have Superintendent Lewinick begin since he's Superintendent Moorhead and that's where it will be located.
Perfect. Superintendent Lewinick.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time this morning for us to be allowed to present our proposal to you, and thanks to Mr. Lean for his support as well. This pilot project is a proposal that we would like to see implemented in Clay County, and for us, it's twofold. We feel it serves not only our students that are in the K-12 realm, but also those that are potentially entering the workforce in terms of workforce development, and working with our Fargo-Moorhead Economic Development Corporation, we have some statistics that I think Brian can share with you that explain in detail the importance of why we'd like to see this moving forward. I think the other thing that bears mentioning why we believe this project, this pilot project, to be so critical to our area, not only for the workforce development and for our K-12 students, but also our local taxpayer, knowing that we wouldn't have to replicate this product or project across multiple school districts, but in one location to serve multiple school districts, which we think benefits everybody that's willing to take part in it. Brian, do you have anything to add?
Mr. Lewinick.
I'm sorry. I'm Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Tigerson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you for having us this morning. I've spent most of my 34 years in education in greater Minnesota school districts. rural school districts, many of them smaller school districts, without having corporate presence in the school districts. But in many of those locations, these communities are bedroom communities for regional centers. The parents, the families work in these regional centers, such as the Fargo-Moorhead area. The Dilworth-Glendon and Felton School District is approximately 275 square miles. But a majority of our families, 75 to 80% of our families, are employed in the Fargo-Moorhead area. And what we're looking at is, and coming from a math science background, looking at STEM opportunities and such, this gives us that opportunity to provide our students with experiential learning opportunities that they will not be able to have in most of greater Minnesota, because you just don't have that corporate presence to be able to have those partnerships, which are so vital, the private sector partnerships with public school districts. Many people have said that we are educating students for jobs, employment that doesn't exist currently. And so to be able to give them those experiences, they need to have the hands-on opportunities. That is a particular niche of student bodies, that of school districts, that become a little bit disillusioned with the opportunities. What am I going to go to school for? And we are very good at four-year college-bound route, but we are not necessarily that adept at looking at more in the trades and in the STEM areas. Some of the statistics that Superintendent Lewick was mentioning, the Greater Fargo-Moorhead Economic Development Corporation did a survey of private sectors, and two of the factors that they came up with, factors that make hiring workers a challenge. Number one factor was limited number of qualified candidates in the state. Number two, lack of awareness or misconceptions about the industries. And the second, strategies to address talent challenges and opportunities. Number one was improve the alignment of student career choices, training resources, and industry needs. And the second, work closely with employers to retain talent in the region. So this really provides that opportunity. It's a niche. The Fargo-Moorhead area happens to have three different college preparatory programs. And so this not only provides our students with those opportunities, but also a regional center that would allow our teachers of the region training opportunity.
Thank you, Superintendent Tygeson. Representative Marquardt.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Lean, for bringing this forward, and Superintendents Lunick and Tygeson for being the brainchild behind this proposal. And, you know, we just came out with a forecast, state forecast, a couple weeks ago, and our economy in Minnesota is slowing down. And one of the main reasons is a very tight labor market. And, you know, there's more vacancies than unemployment. But also one of the concerns is employers not being able to get employees to match the needs they want. And a recent survey of manufacturers around the state said their number one concern was finding well-trained, well-educated workforce for their business. And so this pilot program, so we're looking for electricians and mechanics and contractors and welders and nurses and all these folks. And what this pilot program would do and is that every student, before they would leave a Clay County school, and this could be replicated around the state, would have the opportunity to learn a job set that would match the skills that the employers in the area are looking for. And this is really the direction we need to go. And, it could be in Clay County, it could be anywhere. But this literally would take the entire county and actually some of the other districts that could be in Norman or Becker or Ottertail, even for that instant, if they could make it work in their schedule to do that. So manufacturers need this. Our students need this. Our local communities need this, because it keeps these young students in the community where the jobs are at, too. But thank you for hearing us, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. And I mean, this is, it would be great to be able to do something this year, but it is something that the state needs to move towards, and it would really jumpstart our economy also if we could start getting some of these type of things going.
Thank you. Other member questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the two superintendents, what is your relationship with Moorhead Community and Technical College? Are they not providing the ability for your students to connect? As we do in East Central Minnesota, as we try to connect with Pine Tech, with St. Cloud, with Brainerd, and work, you know, through partnerships between our school districts and those facilities or those colleges to provide these services for our students. Is that not happening in the Moorhead area?
Superintendent Lunick?
Yeah, it is. We have PSEO agreements right now with M-State, MSU, and Concordia. I think what this does is this strengthens that relationship with M-State. We'll continue to establish programming that the private sector industry wants, and we'll continue to develop that programming. And remember what Brian said earlier, this is also looking forward for jobs that don't exist yet. We have a very willing participant with M-State, and they continue to express their support for this, as well as with our PSEO agreements that are already in place, that we can continue to either those students in K-12 setting can leave the K-12 setting with a certificate or some type of program that says they're ready for work, or they can move into the M-State program with some college credits already to their name and to their background. So we believe that this not only helps those programs, but it also continues to expand those opportunities for those kids that could decide to continue to move on past K-12.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
So, Superintendent, why would you call it a pilot and then remodel this facility? They seem kind of contradictory if you're going to have a pilot and also want bonding dollars for this facility.
Superintendent?
I'm kind of confused there.
So, thank you. So, one of the issues at the high school levels is that so many school districts are trying to infuse STEM type of instruction into the school districts. And from looking at many of these occupations, many of the coursework requires the amount of equipment. If you think of, especially in the trades, to be able to offer those experiential type of learning experience at the high school level to students, it is not cost efficient for most rural school districts to be able to have that type of equipment and to ask local taxpayers to be able to support that. But if we can do this together, working as multiple school districts, it may be low amount of students in each district, but coming together, we can be more cost efficient.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson, so if you can make it brief.
So, Superintendent, why deviate from the expertise at the community college, the Tech and Community College?
Because part of this is also looking at working directly with the private sectors. So some may not involve two-year degrees or accreditation. It may be direct certification with the labor market. So it's beyond just looking at the two-year. That's part of the process, but it may be the fact that in some of these occupations, it may be direct to the workforce. And it's that training need that there is an absence of currently in most of the high school education, coming from being a high school principal for years.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you tell me how you arrived at $6 million?
Superintendent?
Well, we took what's out there in the Fargo-Moorhead area in terms of real estate that's available. And from that point, we've also included that as a point of effort to acquire a facility, but then to have a few dollars left over to retrofit it and then work with the private sectors to put the equipment in it.
Follow up. Okay. Any input from, okay, Representative Juergens?
Real brief, thank you, Madam Chair. The concept that you're talking about sounds familiar to me, and I'm trying to figure out where I'd heard this concept. In my hometown, Watertown, South Dakota, has a school called the Multi-District School that is doing this. It's bringing students in from the surrounding areas for technical-type training. So I would encourage you to just take a look at that and see if it's sort of on the same wavelength.
Any input from the public? Hearing none. With that, Representative Hewitt renews his motion to refer House File 2240 as amended to Ways and Means with a recommendation that it goes to Capital Investment Division. Up next, okay, hang on.
Maybe not.
Okay, we are going to hear House File 521, Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lean.
Do we have to vote, or does the committee have to vote on that motion renewal?
I apologize. Thank you. Yes, we do. So, Representative Hewitt renews his motion to refer House File 2240 as amended to Ways and Means with a recommendation that it goes to Capital Investment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Lean. And committee members, we are running behind. We are going to hear Representative Dabney's bill, and we will adjourn after that. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 521 to be before the committee recommended to pass to Ways and Means, referred to Ways and Means with a recommendation to be re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment.
Representative Dabney moves House File 521 to be referred to Ways and Means with recommendation that it goes to Capital Investment.
All right, Madam Chair, members, thank you. I'll be brief if I can. House File 521 envisions a bond program for school safety grants to be available to school districts. Last year's bonding bill included a $25 million program. The grant requests by school districts across the state were more than 10 times that. So clearly the demand is there. This is an attempt to respond to that demand. With me today is Denise Dietrich from the Minnesota School Boards Association.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I will be brief. This grant, with as good as it was, inadvertently created a school security inequity across the state of Minnesota. These layers of inequity become evident within a school district and then school district to school district across the state. School districts that did not receive state funding must now seek alternative funding stream pathways. And that may mean money from the classroom, or that may mean raising your local property taxes. So the other point that I would like to bring up in support of this bill is that at this point, those schools who applied for this grant have now publicly identified their needs, and there's more specifically their security needs, and this could create a vulnerability or a liability issue within school districts. And as Chair Dabney pointed out, with this type of response across the state from school districts, the legislature should respond with urgency. School safety should continue to be a high priority and funded equitably across the state. And so with that, I will just point out that MSBA did put a couple of things in your folders. There is a fact sheet on the grant program that looks like this. And there, we also included two spreadsheets, one list of those school districts that did receive the grant money and a list of those school districts that did not. And as I mentioned, that created an inequity across the state. With that, I will turn it over to Cheryl Bolton.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Cheryl Polzine, and I'm currently serving my eighth year as a school board member in Wayzata and my third year as a board member of Minnesota School Boards Association. I'm also a parent and a community member who's concerned about student safety and security. I've come before you today to share my perspective on why House File 521 is so important. As Ms. Dietrich pointed out, the 2018 school safety grant funded only a fraction of projects which qualify under the program. The woefully underfunded program leaves over $230 million worth of projects identified yet unfunded. Districts of these projects must choose between going without the safety measures deemed necessary or taking the funds from an already strapped budget, compromising other programs. This exacerbates inequities in education funding. Another unintended consequence of last year's grant program is the potential for inequities within individual districts that this has generated. As the 2018 safety grants were awarded on a building level, many districts submitted several applications for similar projects in numerous buildings. If one project was awarded and the others were not, what is the district to do to ensure equity across the district in their different buildings? Many districts are now grappling with how they can, in good conscience, accept and collect these grants and improve safety as intended in only one of their buildings. This can lead to unequal treatment across their district. Additional safety grants provided by House File 521 will not solve all of these difficulties, but they will help. Any additional funds to ensure completion of as many qualified safety projects as possible will certainly improve our current situation. I believe that additional safety grants are one tool the legislature can provide districts to address safety and security concerns. I also encourage you to support bills that would expand qualified uses of long-term facilities maintenance funds, as well as bills that will increase the Safe Schools levy with equalization. These tools, along with additional safety grants from House File 521, would provide a many-pronged approach, allowing districts to use whichever tool best fits their unique needs and help us to meet the expectations of our parents and the public. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I will be happy to answer any questions to the best of my ability.
Thank you. Member questions? Seeing none, would there be any public input? Seeing none, closing comments. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Very good. With that, Representative Dabney renews his motion to move House File 521 to Ways and Means with the recommendation that it goes to capital investment. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
With that, we are adjourned.